Good morning. So I don't have a joke, but two things are amusing me. First of all, candy streamers and noisemakers. We can tell who's not preaching today. The second thing is the thunderstorm. I'm not a big thunderstorm person, but me standing up here talking on this topic goes directly against a lot of stuff I was taught as a child. I think it's a sign I'm not supposed to be talking today, but Beth didn't go for that, so here we are. All right, so explaining what Christ the King means to me is a story that pretty much spans my life. And with so many stories that have anything to do with what makes me me, it starts with my mother. As I've been going through her papers, I've come to realize that she had a deep belief in God that never really quite found a denominational place to roost. During my childhood, we were Methodist, Presbyterian, and Quaker. Weaving through and dominating the variations in religious doctrine was her belief system, which did not strictly follow any of those. The result was that I have had to sort out input from many sources to define what I believe. So how did I get from there to here? One of my favorite childhood hymns is "He Leadeth Me." The chorus goes, "He leadeth me, he leadeth me, by his own hand he leadeth me. His faithful follower I would be, for by his hand he leadeth me." As a child, I had a picture of a very friendly octopus, because how else could God hold so many hands? One of my favorite psalms is Psalm 139, and it emphasizes two things: how completely God knows us, and that there is nowhere we can go that God cannot find us. And I'm going to read a few verses. "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me." Oh, this is the New International Version, by the way. "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light will become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." One of the basic tenets of Quakerism is that God lives inside each one of us and emphasizes listening for his voice in whatever way it comes. So the story of Elijah and the still small voice really resonated with me. As I've grown, so has my perception of God. Authors such as Rodney Romney, Max Lucado, and Beth Moore have deepened and broadened my understanding of what it means to be and live as a child of God. The biggest differences between my mother's beliefs and that of the churches we attended was the nature of Christ. The church told me that Jesus was God in human form, that he was fully God and fully human. By her actions and instruction of what was right and wrong in the world of religion, my perception is that my mother believed that Jesus was more of a prophet, that his teachings absolutely have merit, but he was not divine. I drifted along trying to negotiate the two sets of teachings. When I found Lutheranism as a young adult, at the time Galilean Chapel in Ocean Shores was the main church out there, I discovered grace, something that had been lacking in all the other teachings. I found a home for my core belief in a loving God and recognized the necessity of his incarnation as Jesus to reveal the way of God's kingdom to humanity. When Pastor Beth asked if I would speak today, I thought it was a great opportunity to pull it all together. Christ presents a way of living individually and together that is the blueprint for solving all the inequities and injustices I see in the world around me. What would Jesus do has become cliche, but it's still a critical question that needs answering many times every day. Christ as King in my life means I don't have to rely on my own abilities to navigate my daily existence. A loving God who knows me, finds me, and guides me is always ready and is always ready to willing and lead. I just have to remember to be still and listen. And when I look at it long enough, I realize that I've come full circle and that that favorite hymn still sums it up best. Sometimes mid scenes of deepest gloom, sometimes where Eden's flowers bloom, by waters calm or troubled sea, still 'tis God's hand that leadeth me. He leadeth me, he leadeth me, by his own hand he leadeth me. His faithful follower I would be, for by his hand he leadeth me.
Christ the King. So, what does Christ the King mean to me? I spent the past 9 days trying to come up with an easy answer to this question, and I found it wasn't too easy. Here's the quick, deeply philosophical overview of what it means to have Christ the King in my life. I'm a servant, here to serve him by serving others as he did. My King inspires faithfulness and devotion. As King, I didn't choose him, he chose me. He's my shepherd. He may settle the sheep from the goats, but all are welcome in his house. He offers me the clothes to the wedding feast and gives me the courage to put them on. He brings me not gold, but peace. He gives me living water to drink, knows everything that I have ever done. That's easy, right? I took about 8 days to come up with that one. My first search online brought up a Wikipedia entry for today as the Sunday of Doom, which is celebrated by the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Sweden. And I stopped looking online for a couple days after that. I asked my little girl Violet yesterday what Christ the King meant, hoping for some sort of childly insight, and she just kind of shrugged. I went to the bookstore looking for some sort of direction, and N.T. Wright pointed me to the letter to the Hebrews. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who is for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. That sounds pretty good, right? Digging into the very old-school Lutheran service book, I found jumping out at me, "What Child Is This?" The song I always kind of hear in my head whenever I hear the words "Christ the King," which is set to the tune of Greensleeves. This is Christ the King, who shepherds guard and angels sing. Haste, haste to bring him laud, the babe, the son of Mary. That seems to fit right. We're moving towards the season. I keep saying that today anyways. Elsewhere in the Nicene Creed, I found the only begotten Son of God, begotten of his Father before all worlds, God of God, light of light, very God of very God. Christ for the King, for me at least, is somewhere in there. My wife Luna last night asked me if I came up with what Christ the King really meant to me, and I told her the answer was still cooking because I wasn't really sure what to say. I went online this morning looking for some sort of inspiration, frantically typing in keywords, and Peter in his second epistle encouraged me to make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control. And to self-control, perseverance, and to perseverance, godliness. And to godliness, mutual affection, and to mutual affection, love. For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in your knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. It didn't really seem to give me an answer to my initial question, what does Christ the King mean to me, but it was something, and the more I thought about it, maybe it really did kind of answer my question. That godliness part is pretty big and scary once I started thinking about it. So I settled on the love part as being something I should focus on. Then I realized I was running out of time to write it all down. Luna was changing a diaper and I saw a flash of lightning, and then it thundered, and I said, whoa. It's pretty neat, right? Anyway, what does Christ the King mean to me? I guess I'm still looking for the answer, and that's probably why I'm here right now.
I, like Brian, struggled with this assignment to a certain extent. But let me wander on here. Beautiful music is powerful. Our next hymn, written by Samuel Stone, is probably my favorite. And as I was struggling, this song came in and out of my mind. So, therefore, the church's one foundation is Jesus Christ our Lord. She is his new creation by water and the word. From heaven he came and sought her to be his holy bride. And with his own blood he bought her. And for her life he died. But I'm here to talk about Christ the King. So, I also went to Wikipedia for a definition of king, and I found a king is a male monarch of a major territorial unit. And I said, well, that doesn't help. So I went looking for monarch. A monarch is the sovereign head of state, officially outranking all other individuals in the realm. A monarch may exercise the most and the highest authority in the state of others and may yield that power on behalf of the monarch. Typically, a monarch either personally inherits the lawful right to exercise the state's sovereign rights, the crown, or is selected by an established process. And it goes on to talk about how long they reign in that. But I have trouble with the definition of monarch or king. I've never met a monarch. I've never met a king. But I have met some wannabes. You know? I remember back when I was in the Army and I was off on a college campus and we were teaching young people to be officers. We had a major there who came in and he really was scared of the kids, but it came out in an over jealous manner where he tried to be the king and tried to be the sole authority of everything. He didn't earn their respect. He didn't do a real good job molding those people, but he wanted to be the king because he was in charge, so therefore we go on. I also worked for a colonel once whose job was to support units with management of supplies, spare parts, maintenance, and transportation. He followed in a person who was very eager to work with the units he supported, and we were transitioned into the M1 main battle tank and the Braley fighting vehicles, which were new vehicles, and nobody knew how to take care of these things. And we were in Germany, and of course all the spare parts came from back here, so it was rather difficult. Any innovative, well thought out manner would work. Well, good old Fighting Joe just wanted to do it his way, which was the old way, which didn't work for the new vehicles, and there was much consternation. And luckily, the people we supported did work with us, and in spite of the king, we managed to get through. So I had trouble with the king part. Is there a word that fits better for me? I should probably go back to the beginning. It all started with my parents. They're telling me about Jesus and taking me to church and Sunday school. They're in a room only yards away from where Kate and I were married. Mrs. Seidel told us stories of Christ's time on earth. I think this was the foundation. As I grew older, I have thought about what I heard in that room and in the parables. For me, these were important. At the time, I really didn't know why. I have learned more in my journey through life's experiences as I met many people and witnessed many events. Over my life's journey, I have also met many wonderful people. I can't recall his name right now, but there was a major who taught me how to lead and take care of soldiers, or was it people in general? I was just down in Texas a couple weeks ago, and I had the privilege to meet with an old friend down there, who I call Uncle Pete. Uncle Pete is not my uncle in any manner, but he's been a longtime friend and mentor of mine. I had minimal experience compared to my contemporaries when he and I came together, but he worked with me. He allowed me to grow my skills and knowledge. He encouraged me to try new ideas. He earned my trust and I his. He made me explain my plans, let me experiment with what I had learned, but was always there to support me. We worked together in two additional assignments across the years and continue today to be friends. An inspiration he was. But my life's been full of many other blessings. Today's gospel, we'll touch on it, but a couple years ago, Pastor Al Solmanson sent me a copy of a sermon he was preparing to give in Petersburg. It was titled, Have You Seen Jesus Today? This was after Josh's surgery, and I realized that yes, I had seen him in many people and in many acts. He was clearly present in my life and continues to be visible daily. We just need to look for him. The baptismal font, the water in the font, the simple act of reapplying the sign of the cross to our foreheads. I didn't realize that was so available to us and so inspiring to some of us, especially me, until David a long time ago came back through the aisle sprinkling holy water on everybody. Some of you were here. And it just, thank you, Pastor Beth and Eric, for having that out every day, every Sunday. I appreciate it. The bread and wine that we will share today, open to all, given for all. Enough said about that. The power of prayer and the power of touch that have become so clear to me since joining St. Mark. Thank you all for giving me that. Well, anyway, I've rambled for a while, and it's now time to get back on the subject. So now I must ask myself, what is Christ to me? What do I know? What have I learned about him in a journey through life? I'm back to Wikipedia. Here's another definition. A person who, in the face of danger and adversity, or from a position of weakness, displays courage and or the will for self-sacrifice for some greater good of all humanity. That was a definition of hero. So if I have trouble with Christ the King, what I shall call Christ will be Christ my hero. Thank you.
We'll sing verses 1 and 5 of The Church's One Foundation. Gospels from Matthew chapter 25. Jesus said, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people from one another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, Truly I tell you, just as you did it to the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. Then he will say to those at his left hand, You that are accursed, depart from me into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and all his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. Naked and you did not give me clothing. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. Then they will also answer, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not take care of you? Then he will answer them, Truly I tell you, just as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. The Gospel of the Lord. You may go ahead and be seated, please.
Well, I am absolutely the least scholarly of all because I did not go to Wikipedia. I actually read the first chapter of Annie Lamott's Help, Thanks, Wow last night, which is kind of more where I sit these days. This was an interesting week to be asked to give a mini-sermon because I had very little spiritual juju or flow going on. When I feel truly aligned with God's Spirit, there's an ease and a flow to my life, along with a profound feeling of awe, relaxation, contentment, serenity, and peace. I was feeling none of these last week. I was edgy and restless and irritable and at loose ends. I couldn't really concentrate on anything. And although I had nothing to worry about, I felt a fear, a soul sickness that used to drag me around for years. I know with absolute certainty that even when I'm feeling my craziest and my most out of touch with God, He is right there with me and wants nothing but the best for me. Even when I can't feel that, I know that is true, and it gives me much comfort. It isn't that He's not there. It's that my human mind just can't open enough in that frantic moment to let Him in. I love Annie Lamott's book so much because she explains me to a T. I use her book, Help, Thanks, Wow, frequently as a meditation, and am often in the help me, help me, help me prayer. How can we be so holy as in children of God and such a human mess at the same time? It's just a mystery to me. I remember someone once said, the golden rule says that we shall treat our neighbors as we treat ourselves, and we usually do. The problem is that when you can't stand yourself or you treat yourself terribly, you oftentimes can't stand your neighbor or treat them well either. Accepting the holy mess that we are and learning to love ourselves is the hardest work in life, and it's not a one-time job, but a lifelong exercise. So what feeds my soul is getting out of myself and my head and doing for others. My mother and my grandmother were great role models for this. Both of them would give the shirt off their back in any moment and anything else they had, including lots of food for your freezer. For them, the love of Christ compelled them, and it compels me every day. When I retired, I made a vow to myself that every day I would do something for someone else, and what a gift and freedom it has been to have the time to do that. There's a quote that I love that has been attributed to Kahil Gibran and to another Indian guru whose name I cannot pronounce. It says, "I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I served and I saw that service was joy." I find Christ in the garden volunteer community as we all work together to do something so wholesome as grow food for others. I find Christ in the recovery community when a newly sober woman grasps the 12-step program, finds her higher power, and learns how to love herself again. I find God as I have coffee with someone who has lost a child, and I can listen and fully understand that grief. I also find God in the joyous laughter of my grandchildren, in music, in nature, in exercise, in other people. I believe that Christ is in everything and that we are always standing on holy ground. I must have a regular spiritual practice to keep my faith alive. So if I don't have my head in a spiritual book, don't read my daily meditation books, and don't commune with fellow believers and folks in the alcohol recovery community, I get very lost very fast. I don't know why it takes so much work for me to stay in conscious contact with God, but it does. And if I want to feel the peace that passes all understanding, it's what I must do. This gospel is almost perfect for me. It is why I give money to people holding up signs on street corners. I hope they use that money wisely, but if they use it to buy cigarettes or alcohol, that's not my business. It's why the majority of my life is spent doing things for less fortunate folks. I have been so insanely blessed in my life that the love of Christ compels me to share. I say that the passage is almost perfect because I don't like nor understand the judging part at the end. The God of my understanding is an unconditionally loving God who does not judge us for doing wrong, but realizes that we are sick humans and would do better if we could. So Jesus Christ is the role model for how I want to live my life. Thank you.
Many thanks, Brian, Jenny, Gary, and Gail. Let us stand.